it's all over here.
Hate it when 2 o'clock sneaks up on you, Barker.
Didn't sneak up on me. I'm ready to go, buddy. I'm like a bullpen arm. I'm ready to go.
You're like Eric Swanson with a 90-mile-an-hour fastball.
No, his fastball velocity was okay. It's just split finger was...
It is Blair and Barker. It's an off day for the Blue Jays. They're in San Diego. Lucky, lucky Blue Jays.
Oh.
In the Gaslamp District. That's right
expensive
about now.
There, too, but it's really nice weather.
I'd be there now. I'd be in a patio.
You would?
11. Yeah, it's okay to be drinking at 11. I know one thing. I bet they were drinking on the flight yesterday.
It's a good chance.
Oh, my God.
Good chance.
The Blue Jays, we mentioned, have today off. They're in San Diego. They open a 3-game series against the Padres tomorrow. Of course, the flight to San Diego would have come on the heels of a loss to the Yankees, 6-4, a game the Jays led 4-2 before the bullpen.
That's one guy. Wasn't the bullpen.
Yeah, it's fair. It's
one guy.
And the Yankees went on to 6-4 win. And, I mean, Kevin, April 18th, it's early, but you had a chance to sweep the Yankees. That had a feeling to me as if it's one of those games where at the end of the year, if you miss the playoffs by a game, half a game, you're going to look back at that game and go, I wonder what would have happened if, oh, I don't know. Let's say Nate Pearson was here. Or, there's nothing you can do if Chad Green's hurt, he's hurt. But we've got to talk. That was a very textured game. Gossman, I think, answered a lot of questions. Like, they went 6-3 in the homestand. I feel much, 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 much better about this team now than I did at the start of the
homestand. Feel better about the rotation.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm going to have to embrace it. It's going to drive me nuts. There are going to be days where I'm going to be throwing stuff out of the press box or at the TV. I get all that. I know there are going to be games where they're going to score 4 runs and go 1-for-19 with runners in scoring position, but still win 4-2. I'm prepared to embrace the offensive suck that we may see this year from the Toronto Blue Jays. All that aside, Kevin, it was a bit of a gut punch yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I just think it's if you're John Snyder, you're trying to figure out, because who you don't have available in your pen, how do you get it through because of who's starting and Kevin Gausman? You have no idea what he was going to give you.
No.
I know that I'd talked to people that were close around that, and I actually talked to Kevin, and he was saying it was coming out hot. He was thinking he was having a good day. But if you're John, you watch the first inning, those 27 pitches,
yep,
you're thinking to yourself, because if you don't have Jimmy Garcia, you don't have Romano, you don't have Chad Green, you don't want to pitch Bowden Francis, because the only reason he's here is to follow Rodriguez.
Let's just stop there so we can tell, because we're gonna talk about the bullpen. Thing to keep in mind: one, Jimmy Garcia was not available yesterday. Two,
he pitched 2 days in a row.
Yeah. Two, Jordan Romano. The Jays said, John Schneider said, that out of the gate they are not going to use Jordan Romano in back-to-back days. He's coming off an injury. You can whine about it all you want. I trust the data that they have. I have no problem with the fact that Jordan Romano didn't get up yesterday. Chad Green was not available, just as Genesis Cabrera wasn't available earlier in the homestand. Remember, we're wondering why Mesa, who doesn't have his stuff, when he has Genesis Cabrera. Then you find out after the game that Genesis Cabrera says, Skip, I'm sore today. Okay. Same thing with Chad Green yesterday. He's sore. I mean, you tell your guys you want them to be honest with you, and Chad Green was honest with them. So John Schneider doesn't have Garcia, doesn't have Romano, doesn't have Chad Green. We have to throw that out there. And as my friend Mr. Barker says, Bowden Francis is here because he's going to be backing up Yariel Rodriguez on Friday. So, now, continue.
Yeah. Okay. Look, going into the game, you have no idea what you're going to get from Kevin Gausman. So you're thinking to yourself, who do I have down there that may have to give me two innings? That would be the first thing you're thinking of. And then after the 27th first pitch inning, you're really thinking about that. And then rolling in through, what, half of the fifth inning where he's throwing 26 pitches, you're thinking to yourself, I'm going to have to really think about which one of these guys, whether it's Richards, Cabrera. You don't want to use Bowden Francis because he's not a high-leverage guy. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the lead. You're not going to give the ball to him because you have other options. Tim Mesa, you know, probably Tim Mesa's not going to give you a couple of innings. Hennessy Cabrera had a couple of days off. He's probably the one guy, right? But you want to give him the ball in the right pocket.
Yep.
That's in the, what was that, the seventh inning. You face 7, 8, 9. Yep. That's a lefty, switch hitter, lefty. So you're giving him the ball in the right pocket. If you have to pitch him two innings, you'd rather do it with the lead, right? And then they go and score two runs, and now instead of 2-1, it's 4-1 in the eighth inning. You're cooking with gravy, right? You're not afraid to run him back out there because he's had a couple of days off. And what you don't have is the guys that you just mentioned in Romano and Garcia and Green. You know, you don't have your highest leverage guys, so you're just trying to bridge it to the ninth inning, and you're thinking, because I've gotten Swanson up in the eighth inning, because I may need to pitch him against Stanton, and if I get him up because he hasn't pitched and he's been injured, I don't want to sit him down and not throw him, so I'm going to throw him regardless, and I'm going to throw him in a ninth inning. I'd rather have him in a high-leverage situation with the lead because he's been there and done it before. And, oh, by the way, the three guys that he was facing, 4, 5, and 6, I went back and looked it up last year. They were over 0 for 5 combined against Swanson. So you
and
felt-
one of those guys, Judge, was not having a good series. He
wasn't facing Judge. He was facing 4, 5, 6.
4, 5, and 6.
Yeah,
sorry.
That was Torres, Stanton, and Verdugo.
My bad.
He had two righties and a lefty, right? So you got it sort of maneuvered into where you want each guy facing the right pocket at the right time with the lead. Those are your highest leverage guys because you had a little separation, right? Hennessy Cabrera sometimes get a little wild, but his stuff's better. Like, the velocity's better, the location's better, the breaking stuff's better. Like, he can, other than throwing the two-strike pitch down the middle to Soto, he was really good, right? And I wonder if it would have stayed 4-1, do you bring in Bowden Francis? That's the thing. That's the only thing, right? But once it went 4-2 after he gave up the solo homer, you're bringing in Swanson because he's one of your guys. If the GM's going to put him on the roster with who you don't have, you're going to pitch him. And John mapped it out exactly the way he wanted to map it out, right? With the guys he didn't want to use for multiple innings. You know, Richards, you ain't going to throw him two innings because he threw 26 pitches the night before. So you think you put him in a big spot, 4, 5, 6. He has 3 up, 3 down with 14 pitches. You have the lead. It's sort of passing the baton with the lead with your highest leverage guys. It's just putting the right guy in the right pocket. He did it. Just so happens the ninth inning guy didn't have a split finger. And when you don't have it, dude hits the ball to the moon. And that's normally how you lose a baseball game.
And here's where I have a question. Nate Pearson was sent down and Mitch White was DFA'd to make room for Swanson and Romano. Okay. I have no problem bringing Romano up. I wonder why you had to bring both of them up at the same time. Send Nate Pearson down, who finally looks like the guy you wanted to see. Oh, and by the way, had some pretty effective work against the Yankees the last time he faced him. He carved up Aaron Judge the last time he faced him. That's my question. Do you have to bring both of them up at the same time? Why couldn't you bring Romano up, DFA Mitch White, keep Pearson, you know, and then bring Swanson up, you know, bring him up in time to go to San Diego? Like that, I don't believe for a second that Eric Swanson looked so good at AAA that you had to get him up here right now.
Yeah, we know better.
I'm not buying that.
Like, we saw enough video, we'll tell you, and a conversation that I heard.
I'm not buying
that. Said he didn't have his velocity. Yeah. Like, we knew that already.
Why is he up here?
Yeah, I think that's sort of when you call down, you ask a veteran guy who you're counting on to do a lot for your team throughout the entire season, and he tells them that he's ready to go, you're going to make the move and call him up. I think that is exactly what it was. Was it the right move? Obviously not, because it didn't work out. I mean, it's when, you know, you have to throw a guy when you have to throw a guy and it looked the way it looked, then you start pointing the finger at why you did it. And it's one of those things where, you know, I just, there's a lot of hate for John. Like you're getting that a lot of the times, right? Because of, you got guys tweeting from Michigan about why ain't you bringing in certain guys? It's just sometimes it'll make you wonder, right? I don't think John sits over there during the game thinking to himself, how am I going to screw this up in the ninth inning? I'd rather put, the less predictable guy in the game just because, rather than put the guy in that we sort of know can get the outs because we've actually seen it firsthand. Sooner, like, not too far removed from watching Chad Green get through meat of the order with some good stuff because, he stopped throwing the breaking ball. The slider's better, and the velocity now, he can hit quadrants because he's a little bit more freer and easier with the mechanics. Like, we've actually seen that. I think people got to remember that. It's not, again, I think if Gausman had went an extra inning, absolutely. But after the 27th first pitch inning and then halfway through the 26th pitch fifth inning, John's thinking, now I got to make up that extra inning without using Bowden Francis because I don't have Chad Green. How do I do it? And you're sort of thinking from the ninth inning back, right? I got Swanson in the ninth. I got to get it to the ninth inning, hopefully with a couple of run lead. That's exactly what happened. Just so happens the guys went out there and laid an egg. So I just don't know how you can argue how John handled that. For me, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. Just the guy that he ran out there didn't have his stuff. If you want to blame anybody, blame the pitcher and the GM for, like you said, activating both guys and sending down a guy that can throw 102 miles an hour right now who looks like it's free and easy and he's found something. And that's this time of the year is very predictable. Like, the bats are just not working, right? The Yankees, that's probably offensively the worst we're going to see them all year. Yeah. Like, they just didn't have it. And when Judge looked like that, it's a good time to have the arm that can sit at 99, locate that, have the good secondary stuff, be confident in changing speeds, and be predictable. And when you don't have guys that are predictable, your fingers crossing that when you go to them, and you got to get them loose. And when you get them loose, you got to throw them. That they're coming out there and throwing strike one. And, the split finger's good enough. And just so happens it wasn't. So those are tough ones to swallow. They had them. Like,
they were there. They were there to be swept.
Absolutely. They were there to be swept. Yeah, that's a tough one to swallow. Because personally, they're not a good enough team to go on 10 game winning streaks. Every single game that they play that they can win late in the game matters. Like, all of these are going to come down to the end, right? You're going to have quite a few teams bunched up trying to get in with that third wild card spot. For me, Jays are one of those. Mm. And games like that really matter. So, hopefully they can overcome it. Maybe the offense will start turning the corner. Some guys are starting to hit some homers, so maybe that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, the Jays, I'll tell you one thing. The Jays have been getting some breaks early in the year. They are not going to face Yu Darvish in this series. Yu Darvish has gone on the IL. I almost hate going online in the morning now and looking at the baseball sites because it's just so-and-so is injured. Rafael Devers is going for an MRI. Ozzie Albies broke his toe.
Yeah.
Chris Bryant's on the IL with a back issue. And Yu Darvish, I'm just, let me just call this up here.
Think the Rockies want a do-over with Bryant? It's like, what was it, 7 for 182?
This is even better if you're the Boston Red Sox. Tyler O'Neill's gone on the IL as well with that was following that collision of Monday's game we talked about.
Yep.
Devers had knee discomfort, and again, he's going MRI. O'Neill is in concussion protocol as a result of that collision. And I mentioned that Darvish has gone on the IL with neck tightness. So, he last pitched on Sunday. I believe early he was scheduled to pitch in this series at one point, I believe. But now it's Yariel Rodriguez against Matt Waldron on Friday, Jose Berríos against TBA on Saturday, then Chris Bassett and Joe Musgrove pitching on Sunday. So we talked about the ninth inning. We've dissected that. I want to talk about the lineup Yeah. I do feel better about the lineup now than I did because I saw the lineup win games kind of doing what Don Mattingly said they were going to have to do to win games. I'd really love to see someone just turn around a home run and blast one, but I don't know.
Barshow.
Well,
hit a couple of us.
The two guys that I want to talk about in particular out of this homestand, one, Dalton Varsho, who's had quite a homestand, and Vladdy. Vladdy's hitting four of his last five games. I thought two games, the middle game of the Yankee series, a couple of those singles where he kind of pulled his hand in. To me, he looks a little better right now. So I want to know from you, those two dudes in particular, are they in a better place now at the end of this homestand than they were going into the homestand in your mind?
Yeah, Dalton Varsho, absolutely. He's, at last eight games, he's 8-for-25 with a double and four homers.
And he's homered off lefties, off a lefty. Too.
Yeah, he hit his first home run off a
Rodon, right?
No, Gomber. That was his first home run since September of 2022. Yeah, that's why he didn't play a lot against lefties, right?
But he homered off Rodon, I thought.
I think conversations that he's had with teammates about bat path has been big for him. You know, it's not so much hearing it from the coaches anymore. You know, it's people like Bo Bichette and George Springer that say, you know, sometimes you can overthink the bat path thing, right? It is get your pitch. If you don't like the ball up, try to lay off of that. I know for a fact that he seems to look like, and the people that I've talked to, seems he's really made a conscious effort with pace. It's not so robotic. Okay,
explain that.
Well, it's not robotic. It's not where I think about where he's a stride separate guy. Starting and stopping is very hard to do. I mean, it's like pitching. It's like Yusei Kikuchi, right? When he was starting and stopping his momentum towards his target, it's hard to do that. Like, he's just not quick enough and strong enough with his core to be able to do that and repeat that over and over again and have success consistently at the big league level, just impossible to do that. It just looks like it's not so robotic. It is, you know, where my foot goes, everything's going to follow. If I'm fluid with that and not so robotic with it, the bat path will follow. You know, he's a chop wood guy. It's not so much that, like, he's got a natural uppercut in his swing because he's a lefty and he is a little guy. Little guys a lot of the times want to drop their hands because of where the strike zone's at, right? They're thinking about the ball down, getting the ball in the air. You got to have a little natural uppercut in your swing to do that. It's just natural for him to try and do that. So that's why they're preaching and trying to consistently tell him, try and lay off the ball up until you actually have to try and hit it or foul it off, lay off of it. And the two homers he's hit right down the middle. Like, those are pitches that he can, you know, not be so robotic with and have a good – you know, fluidity to his swing and just sort of it's drive down and through it, get to your finish because everything from the ground up is working in unison and I'm not overthinking it. And I think conversations that I've had with other people that have said teammates have had conversations, stop thinking about it so much. You're a big leaguer now. Let's get away from that. Like, you've been in the big leagues long enough to not overthink these things. Like, they're giving you opportunities to go out there and figure it out. Now it's time for you to sort of take the bull by the horns and go out there and do these kind of things. And I just think hearing it from teammates is different than hearing it from coaching staffs. And I think he's starting to listen a little bit, have a little bit more fun with your bats at the plate, which is, it's a game. Sometimes people forget that. And it's easy to forget it when you're not real good at it consistently like he has been. And for him to be an 8-for-25 and start hitting homers and start doing it against lefties, like he's pulling the ball in the air against the lefty, will tell you that the mind and the mechanics is working together. That's a great thing. And for him to start hitting some homers will only bode well for this team because they're going to need a couple more guys. Vladdy looks the same to me.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to...
Well, no, that's why I asked you.
I expect Vladdy to do things that other guys can't do, and we're not seeing it.
Okay.
And again, I'm going to continue to say this. I will talk about Vladdy like he's a good hitter, not a great hitter. And that's the way he looks. I don't care if Vladdy hits a 17 hopper to right. I'm happy that he did it in his first at bat because of how hard he's working off the field. So hopefully it translates on the field. But for me, his at-bats look the same. Like, big moments he chases. Why are you chasing so much? If you're a great hitter, great hitters don't chase a lot. Sometimes they do. Aaron Judge is chasing because probably numerous things, right? It's, you know, overcompensating for something that's going on with his lower half. And, you know, sometimes you run into good pitching, you try too hard. You know, you see your buddy in front of you doing things you want to follow. That's sort of what's happening. But with Vladdy, Vladdy looks the same to me. Like,
I'm looking for green shoots, right?
Yeah, mechanics are not any different. His,
all right.
You know, what did you have? When's the last time you've seen him take velocity, pull it in the air for a homer?
I guess I'm just looking for.
That's what I want to see. Until he starts doing that consistently.
You know what? I want to see. Yeah, I just want to see some hits because I wasn't seeing hits. Right now, I'm just taking.
I guess.
I'm taking the hits to center field.
You're positive. I expect more. And quite frankly, I mean, I don't want to say this in a bad way, but man, how much can we talk about a great hitter not doing things? Is he? And that just tell you, I had to talk this much about hitting. Other people that can't hit the way we think Vladdy is supposed to be hitting talk about hitting this much and have 9 hitting coaches come in 2 years in a row like. Sooner or later, we just got to come to the realization that it is what it is. If he gets 3 hits a game and there are 17 hoppers to right, be happy he's getting 3 hits a game.
I want to talk a little bit about the Rogers Center.
It ain't it.
Yeah, it's...
It ain't it.
It's sucking a lot of home runs out of the game.
You think they can make the playoffs being a 500 team? Because that's basically what they're going to have to try and do offensively because it's hard to hit homers there. Unless you're pulling balls like to direct, say, right field or left field. Right center doesn't seem like it's traveling. Center field doesn't seem like it's traveling. Like Soto laid into a couple. Like the one that got hit off of Gosman to center.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thought one, that the line up. Drive off Bassett, too. I mean, I thought that thing was.
Like he's hit
went
some balls.
I went back and looked at my scorebook. I had 6 balls hit into the outfield, 6 fly balls that I thought, you know. And then one that did get out, I didn't think it was going to get out. But, it's, again, maybe it plays different when the weather's warmer and the roof's open. I don't know if it really did last year, but I will say this. I'm beginning to see why this team is focused so much on you know, run prevention and why Don Mattingly's kind of talked down the whole idea of this team being a home run hitting team. I just think it's, again, it may change when the weather's warmer. I know I've talked to Buck about this, and Buck's talked about it on the air, though. It's just, and yet you said you talked to Bo yesterday, and Bo said the ball's really flying.
That's what he said. Maybe he's talking about batting practice. Maybe he's talking about the guys that hit home runs are hitting them in batting practice. I don't know the answer. I just know what I've seen in the game. Ball doesn't look like it's carried. No. And it'll make you wonder, can an offense have 2 different approaches? One on the road, and one
at home.
And are they good enough to do that? From what we've seen consistently, I don't think you can go on the road and think, okay, now it's traveling line to line. I can think about getting the ball in the air. When I go home, I'm thinking about hitting more of the top part of the baseball and the middle part of the baseball. Are they good enough to do that? Pitching's way too good now, and there's not too many fastball counts for you to think, you know, ambush, party out front enough to think that you can have 2 mental approaches that are different that far apart. I just don't think you can do that. So, That's a whole different animal, right?
Well, maybe they're in San Diego, which is not a great hitter's park. Maybe that'll maybe this will travel well on the road. Who knows?
Pitching and defense does. Their pitching's really good. Their defense is really good. You know, don't mess up a lot on the bases. That will help.
No, the other thing we didn't really talk about, but we started to see during the homestand, I think, was a little, I don't know if aggressiveness is the right word. There were a lot of smart decisions made in the base pass. Now, of course, there was one Rabeau's picked off. But, I mean, there were a lot of smart decisions made in the base pass. You know, to me, one of the plays that's really going to stand out is that Ernie Clement slide. Like, there's just, as I said, I feel a lot better about the lineup now than I did at the start of the homestand because I can see how it can win games. I don't think that style works in the playoffs. I really don't. At some point, you've got to hit home runs, But I can see now where that offense might be able to have some results.
I'm going to think that.
But I know you're not on the same page.
Well, John and Pete Walker are always going to have to make the right move when it goes to the pitching staff. And you're going to have days where guys are not available and guys are going to hang split fingers. And this is sort of what you're going to see, right, is because the offense consistently is just not having the big innings. Like, it's going to have innings that are big, not just one inning where they can score two or three, have two or three or four of those innings where they're scoring two or three because somebody can bloop and bomb a guy and you can do that one through nine, right? You're sprinkling out through your lineup balance and guys can, you know, managers on other teams are going to have to throw the right guy at the right time because you have enough balance in your lineup that give you quality at bats and can run into things. I think the offense just told us exactly what the offense is. I think we already knew what it was. It hadn't changed for me. I think the pitching staff's really good. I think Kevin Gausman's an older, experienced guy. And
they won games with that offense.
They won games because they can pitch.
Right, but that's why they're winning. The offense was good enough that they could win games with it. They took two of three from the Yankees. They did just enough.
Because their pitching's really good.
Right, but okay, you're depressing me. I'm going to move on. Let me ask you a question. You're depressing
me. Can they make the playoffs with Dalton Varsho leading their team in homers?
Jeff Passan's is ESPN's MLB insider.
Speed it up. Shut up.
Jeff Passan is ESPN's MLB insider. The answer's no. Jeff Passan is ESPN's MLB insider. Join us next. It's Blair and Barker for an optimistic Thursday, at least on this side of the table. An optimistic Thursday on Sportsnet.
It's the traffic, Jeff.
Let's not talk about the traffic. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. J.J. Cooper is editor-in-chief of Baseball America. He'll be along at 3 o'clock. And you got to stick around to 3:35. We've got a clip we're playing. It has gone into my post-game interview Hall of Fame. And we're going to play that clip for you. And it's worth hanging around for. It gave me my morning laugh just before I forgot my cell phone, which meant I had to sit in the GO train with no tunes. Listening to people's BS conversations in the quiet zone.
It is amazing how the quiet zone of the GO train.
Everybody, when you're in the quiet zone, shut up.
It is amazing how your misery makes me happy.
I know.
It's amazing.
Bring in Jeff Passan. No misery here. Oh, Let's bring in Jeff Passan, MLB insider at ESPN. No misery here at all. How you doing, Passan?
Is it the Pete Fairbanks interview, Jeff?
Stop it. Why you ruined that? Now everybody's going to go online. Yeah.
Boo.
Dummy.
Wow.
It is a great interview.
It's tremendous.
All I'm going to say is I sent somebody a text last night, and it said, all encompassing suck will be added to my lexicon.
Oh, yes, it is, without question.
So good.
I think generally in our industry, we've kind of lowered the bar a little bit on what constitutes a good. I mean, gone are the days where Keith Hernandez would be smoking while you were talking to him and offer you a beer while you were interviewing him and then just stop, you know, dropping F-bombs all over the place. Those days are gone. But, I'll take my humor where I can get it. Speaking of humor, when does Angel Hernandez get his ass fired, Jeff?
Wow, right to it.
I mean, right there. I don't anticipate it happening anytime soon. I mean, if it hasn't happened yet, what's going to prompt it? He's been doing this for his entire career. And, you know, the MLB Umpires Association is a powerful enough entity to keep people who seemingly do not uphold the standard that umpires try to employ. So I understand the question. It is a very reasonable one to ask. The answer is just kind of dissatisfactory. And the accountability or lack thereof is, I think, the frustrating part for baseball fans. Mm-hmm. You know, we have been gifted the ability to know unequivocally what an umpire is doing in the moment. It is a blessing and it is a curse. Gone are the days of Eric Gregg stretching the strike zone by, 6 to 8 inches on either side of the plate when, Greg Maddux is pitching or LeVon Hernandez is pitching, right, or somebody who gets the benefit of the doubt. But there's a simple solution to this that would have stopped Angel Hernandez's bad strike zone the moment it happened. And it's going on in AAA right now. I'm not going to say that MLB's automated ball strike system is a panacea for what ails the league in terms of missed ball and strike calls. What I will say is that if you have robot umps and you have a challenge system in place, and clearly that first pitch from JP France that was, 3 inches off the plate would have been challenged.
Right.
Angel Hernandez is not going to make that same call again. His zone will change.
You think it will?
Based on 100%.
Okay,
yes.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one question. It's one question I wonder. When you have a veteran umpire, and the reason I threw Angel Hernandez out, I mean, Angel Hernandez, picking an Angel Hernandez or criticizing him rightfully has been a cottage industry for years. But it just seemed to me this year, it seems you're getting more and more, it's getting more and more play in social media. I can tell you that, players talk about it a little more. And that's, you surprise me when you say that. You think that the challenge system will actually make an umpire improve their strike zone? Because continue. I'm surprised.
Well, let's tease this out. Let's say he calls that first pitch that's 3 inches off the plate a strike. And, the way it works is a batter, a catcher, or a pitcher. This is a player-driven thing. They have to tap their head. That's all they do. They just tap their head a couple times, and that's an indication to the challenge operator, like, go run it back and let's see how it goes. You're telling me that after it shows how bad your call was, that you're going to go back and run the risk of getting challenged and embarrassed again and again? You have to recalibrate in the moment, because otherwise the emperor has no clothes, man. Yeah. Like, your incompetence is there for the entire world to see again and again and again. And that, to me, is where MLB could potentially go to the MLBUA and say, we got a problem here. This is embarrassing for everyone involved. And if you and your rank and file don't fix this, then we're going to need to have some discussions. And to me, that's part of what I think the system does. It's wild. Somebody who's been around the game for a long time, on, I think it was the day after these calls from Angel Hernandez, said to me, why is it that AAA has better ball strike umpiring than the big leagues? Mm-hmm. And he's right. He was right, because there's a fail-safe system in place there. And this, this is one of those things where I think it is best implemented for those egregious calls. I am not personally a full robot umpire guy. I just think I get the perspective of people who are like this, balls and strikes should be a binary, right? If a pitch crosses the plate at all, it should be a strike. Yes. I get that. But I don't know. I think there's still something to umpiring, which by the way, it's better than it's ever been. I think that's true too.
I think it is.
Like I think our attention on the matter is heightened because of the technology, but the technology has produced, because it has held accountable for so long now, it has produced better younger umpires. And I think that you know, once the new generation of umpires that have been trained with this technology in place, with this feedback, tends to be the majority population among umpires, that we're never going to see perfection. But I think we could see something very good.
Jeff, the first time I got sent down when I stunk, the very first time, the little ticker on ESPN rolled across because I was the Brewers' top prospect, said Kevin Barker just got sent down. Why don't they do that with umpires? Hold them to the same standard they hold us to. You stink, roll it right across the bottom of the whatever TV or network wants to run that. This sort of babying a unit of people at the big league level, I think that should be over. Just saying there's not enough of them, and once you become a big league umpire, you can be one forever, no matter if you stink or not. I ain't buying that.
And I just
roll it across the bottom of the screen just like they did me and everybody else they send down, and I'll guarantee you that will hit home enough that you will clean it up and be a better umpire. Why don't they do that?
I just want to jump in because in the Premier League in England, if an umpire makes if a referee makes a mistake, he is not allowed to work the Premier League the next weekend. He is sent down to Division One or to the Championship.
Yeah, I just don't understand that.
And it's very public. And it's public.
I just don't get it. It's the big leagues. If you're not good at it, go somewhere else. Like, it's real cut and dry, easy for me. They do it to players, Jeff. Why don't they do it to umpires? I don't get it.
All of this makes sense, but the thing that I'm taking away from it is that the easiest way to get the full redneck out of Kevin Barker is to talk about when he went down to the minor
league. You know what's funny, too, is whenever you said the umpires.
You got pissed off there.
Yeah, you said the umpires.
My goodness, Kevin.
Well, you did say the umpires never been better at AAA. I spent 8 years in AAA. I can tell you they ain't.
Well, he's saying now.
They're not real good.
He's saying now. You haven't been at AAA lately.
I don't know what your guy's standard is for umpiring, but it's like.
What he meant, Kevin, what he meant was that because the ABS system is in place.
They need help.
Yes.
Okay, I understand.
I'm sorry.
I was chapped there a little.
Yeah, I shouldn't have opened the door the umpire thing.
I just don't understand it. It just doesn't make any sense.
I got to tell you, you know what the best part of this job is watching baseball with Barker, and there's a home plate umpire, and I go, yeah, he's having a pretty good day. And Barker says, I had him at AAA. I had him at AAA. He's a dick.
Yeah.
And that's the end of it.
It's like, it's just the attitude, and then you're not a good umpire. And then you mesh the two together, and they're an umpire for like 30 years. It's unbelievable. It's mind-boggling. I just don't understand. That's all.
Okay, well, you got it out of your system. Move on.
Yeah, I don't understand. And are the Kansas City Royals the best team in the American League?
No.
Come on. Play along.
Yeah.
I like home games in October. So if the Royals can somehow win the American League Central, that's great. Have you seen who they've played?
No. I believe they played the Marlins out the gate. Am I right? Or
they did not play the Marlins. They started with the Twins, lost 2 of 3. Okay. They played the Orioles, lost 2 of 3. Then they swept the White Sox in a 4-game series. They swept the Astros in a 3-game series, lost 2 of 3 to the Mets, and beat the White Sox 2 of 3. So 7 of their 12, I believe, wins at this point have come against a team that honestly might lose 110 to 120 games. Mm. So the Royals gauntlet is coming up, and it starts this weekend with the series against Baltimore. They're facing
Toronto.
The Jays for, I think, 4. They've got the Tigers. They've got the Jays for another 3. They've got Texas and Milwaukee after that. Get back to me when I come on May 10th or May 9th. It's going to be one of those two. And let's have this discussion then.
Okay.
If they have gone through those, I think it's 19 games. If they've gone through those 19 games playing 500 baseball, I will be ready to talk about them as a real contender.
Okay, I root for them. I hope it happens. Is the Astros – what's wrong with the Astros, and how do they turn this around?
Getting healthy would be a good start. You know, if you look at their pitching, especially right now, you know, when everything is clicking, they've got Justin Verlander, they've got Framber Valdez, they've got Lance McCullers, they've got Christian Javier, and then, you know, you figure out the fifth starter after that, whether it's Luis Garcia or Ronel Blanco or Hunter Brown. Right now, Framber Valdez is on the injured list. Verlander finally coming back to start. Javier's been fantastic. Blanco's been fantastic. But their pitching otherwise has been a mess. And even though the back end of their bullpen, you know, is supposed to be greatest thing since sliced bread, Brian Abreu hasn't been good. Ryan Pressly hasn't been good. Josh Hader hasn't been good. I mean, among the three of them in like 25 innings, they've allowed more than 20 runs.
Wow.
And when you build a team with a super pen at the back and starting pitching at the front, and that starting pitching isn't healthy and that super pen ain't super, things are going to go sideways, and it's gone pretty sideways so far. Still though, like, seeing the Astros below the Angels and the A's in the American League West,
I know.
Like, yeesh. And the crazy thing is, they're getting Jose Altuve has been awesome.
Yeah.
Like, aside from Mookie Betts and Tyler O'Neill, Jose Altuve has probably been the best hitter in baseball this year. And Kyle Tucker and Jordan Alvarez each have 5 home runs and are doing their normal thing. So it's not like they're getting a lack of production from the guys who they expect to produce. The pitching has just been a disaster.
I'm gonna attempt to touch the third rail here, Jeff. But we know that there are a ton
Great.
Of pitch, that we know that there are a ton of pitching injuries in baseball. Obviously, we also know that one of the women who accused Trevor Bauer of sexual assault has reportedly been indicted on felony charges of theft by extortion and fraudulent schemes. Now, I believe Trevor Bauer is pitching in Mexico. At any point this season, do you see anybody picking up the phone? What would it, I mean, and calling Trevor Bauer?
Well, I'll say a couple of things here. Number one, I think we need to refer back to Major League Baseball's arbitrator decision on Bauer. He was given a 324-game suspension that later got reduced, I believe, to 192 games, mm-hmm. which is still the longest suspension levied under the league and union's joint domestic violence policy. Because of this latest happening legally, Bauer has essentially used that to say, you know, the women who have accused him of these various things, whether it's sexual assault or otherwise, you know, he's using that to say they're lying. I think if you were to talk to Major League Baseball's arbitrator about this, and no one ever is going to say something, and we're not going to see the report, but a 324-game suspension, even if it's reduced to 192, is not something that is idly levied
right.
on a player. And I think that's what Major League Baseball teams are seeing, that, you know, Bauer has gone on a campaign to essentially say, hey, I deserve a shot in the big leagues. But the marketplace, which loves nothing, and I mean nothing more than a pitcher who is willing to sign for the major league minimum, it has been silenced.
Mm-hmm.
So can something change that? Yeah, of course. You know, some team might say it's worth it. But we are at the 2-year almost mark since Bauer's accusation. Is it almost 3 years now? Oh, God, I lose track of time.
I think it is, actually.
It's been a long time.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And no major league team has shown enough interest to make this a reality at this point. So I don't know if that's going to change. It could, but what's going to cause it to change? It seems like it would be a lot of things would have to line up right for Trevor Bauer for that to happen.
Yeah. Is he still any good? I think that'd be the first question you'd have to ask. I don't know how many people would get to watch it.
You know, you look at the stuff. The stuff has looked good in some of the spring training outings he had. He got knocked around in his first start in Mexico, but pitching's hard. Pitching is especially hard in Mexico, where the altitude tends to carry the ball a very long way. He was very good in Japan last year, but that still wasn't enough, right? At some point, the answer is the answer, and he is holding out hope, and I understand why, but I just don't know at this point that hope is going to lead anywhere that we see him back on the mound in the big leagues. Yeah. And I think it's always important to remember that arbitrator's decision. I wish for the sake of everyone who has very strong opinions that we would be able to see this, but the provisions in the agreement do not allow public release of this, so we're just left to guess. And Bauer has done a very good job of making the case why he should be out there, but I think when you make that case, it's not always a complete one.
Jeff, really good of you to join us today. Great stuff as always, my friend.
Yep. See you, buddy.
Yep.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you. And thank you for bringing out the redneck that lurks just below the surface with Kevin all the time.
Now
you
know.
I appreciate it.
Now you know.
Thanks, man. Be well.
See you, buddy.
Jeff Passan, ESPN, MLB insider.
I feel very strongly about that.
The umpires.
They hold players to such a high standard. And when you stink, you're not a big leaguer. Why can an umpire be really bad at his job? And there's quite a few of them. I mean, they're not all bad. There's some really good ones. They're very easy to talk to. I'm not saying it's all of them, but there's a lot of them who have tremendous tons of attitude and they're not real good at their jobs. And I just don't know how they continue to keep their job and do it at the highest level. And I'm sure they're not making, small amounts of money. I'm sure they're doing all right.
I actually had a conversation with Gibby about umpires one time, and we didn't get into names or anything, but he said the thing, everybody, I mean, the usual stuff. Everybody has a bad day or a bad game. Players have a bad game. Umpires have a bad game. He said, what bothers me, this is Gibby, he said, what bothers me is I know when an umpire is not trying.
Hmm.
And that's the thing. Everybody has a bad, it's a long season for those guys too. But at least try. Everybody wants consistency. Consistency is the goal.
Can't we do any better than that?
Exactly. Consistency is the goal.
Yeah.
But that really got under his skin, and that's kind of the way I look at it too. I don't like seeing an umpire. Maybe more than anything else, I don't like seeing an umpire give up in a pitch, and I see that with a lot of umpires. Don't like that.
I don't understand how a bad one sticks around forever. I don't get it.
Well, I do.
Bad players don't stick around forever. How's a bad umpire stick around forever?
I do like what they do.
Angel's not the only bad umpire.
No, but he is.
He's awful, but absolutely.
And, he sued Major League Baseball because he claimed that he wasn't getting postseason work because of discrimination. That lawsuit was thrown out. This year, it's really become an issue. We talked about with our producer, Mark Boffo, about that at bat with Wyatt Langford. I mean, that's...
It's the big leagues. It's not supposed to look that way.
Well...
Ever.
I don't... You can get a pitch wrong. Three pitches in a row, I got an issue with that.
Yeah, I take three games of swings like that, I'm in the minor leagues. That's the difference. I don't get it.
J.J. Cooper is editor-in-chief of Baseball America. We're going to take advantage of an off day to talk a little baseball prospects, take a look at the Blue Jays system, take a look at Jackson Holliday as well. All that ahead, it's Blair and Barker. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And if you're watching us on TV, it's Sportsnet.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
complete and utter lack of respect from the people behind the scenes here.
They have lots for me. I think it's all one-sided. If I was you, I'd work that out.
Shut up, Jeff.
They just pick on you because they love you. You think that's what
it is? Passing spoiled our big thing, big finish.
He did. You should have never said that. Before he came on, you knew he would. That's the kind of person he is. You knew he would. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyhow. Well, we'll still do it. We'll still
because it's funny.
Adhere to this.
I used to do that all the time. Just nobody ever wanted to listen. All the time, every day, I'd have that conversation with myself.
How many interviews?
But nobody ever wanted to.
How many?
Listen.
Honestly, when you the first year you were with the Brewers,
a ton.
When you were the guy,
absolutely.
How many times did the reporters talk to you?
Quite a few. And then after that. When I was in the big leagues, yeah.
How did they treat you?
You seem to say that you talked to me when I was a Blue Jay.
I did.
I am not saying that. I have no idea. I couldn't have picked you two out of a lineup.
Well, come on now. That's completely unfair to me.
Both of you are full of it. Not one time had you ever talked to me. Like, not a chance. But when I was in the big leagues, yeah. You had to do something good, obviously. They ain't going to walk up to you and, you know, talk to you if you're the 26th guy on a 25-man roster.
Yeah, we're talking about we're gonna play a clip later on of I think kind of a funny interview Pete Fairbanks did yesterday with the Rays closer.
There's a lot of that whining going around in April. A lot of whining.
How were you treated by the media in your short time in Milwaukee?
Because
you would have had. Like, I know the beat guys in there. You would have had Tom Hodricor, and I'm trying to think of who the other beat guy would have been. I knew the Milwaukee columnists. They're a pretty good group. Like, Hodricor was around longer than me.
Yeah.
Hodricor was around forever. Did they treat you well?
Yeah, for the most part, I think. I mean, best I remember. It wasn't, I was pretty young. Like, I was trying to not be noticed and go out and be the best I could be, and didn't always work out, but. You know, that's why I said every time we have a 20-year-old on and the way they talk about themselves and how they talk about their organization, I could have never done that when I was that age. Like,
every time we do, you were always remarked.
Yeah, absolutely.
About that.
Yeah, it's just like how grown up they sound.
The first guy I remember we had Soroka on when he was really young?
Yeah.
For about half an hour, Mike Soroka. And Barker kept looking over at me and just shaking his head.
Yeah, just like the grown-up approach that they have towards the media.
Cal another guy.
It's something else, the way they speak. And I mean, it's pretty cool. It was never that way when I was a player. I mean, it's short answers.
But you went did you go to the rookie initiation?
Absolutely.
Or initiation,
no,
pardon me, the rookie media training
absolutely.
Session. Jason Stark spoke.
He was there. Yeah, absolutely. I sure did. Yeah, how do you no comment was a no. You never say that. That's the only thing I really remember
about
that.
Well, that's like red flag in front of a bull. No comment.
Yeah, yeah, never say that.
I got this guy. I got this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was all right.
And you can always fall back.
Euchre was hard on me. I do remember that on the radio.
Yeah, you told me that.
Yeah, he was.
Barker called him up.
No, my mother wrote him a letter.
She wrote him a letter.
No, she didn't call him up.
Your mom wrote Bob Uecker a letter. Did he respond?
Not a chance.
Did he say anything to you about the letter?
He probably didn't even know he got a letter. By that time, I'm sure I'd been sent down and been forgotten. You know, the greatest manager in the history of the sport, and Davey Lopes was ask him. He's the greatest manager walking. Yeah. But... So it is. Every reporter seems to think they are the smartest people on planet Earth and have never missed a fastball down the middle ever in their entire life. So, you know, sometimes you got to speak to them that way. And that's what I try to do, right?
Yeah,
that's the way I spoke to you whenever you talked to me for 45 minutes when I was a Blue Jay.
I didn't say 45.
You basically said I took you to dinner, Barker, and we had this long conversation and –
I used to make it a point when I was a beat writer. I used to make it a point at the September call-ups. I'd go over and just say hi and introduce myself. I did. I just did.
Yeah, that's because you were ticking all the everyday guys off so much that they didn't want to speak to you.
No, it was
and
a thing.
It was you're running out of people to talk to.
No, it was.
And you had to make sure that
you spent more.
I don't believe you.
You spent more time in the clubhouse then as a reporter than you do now, because there just weren't that many places to hide. I mean, think back when you showed up the Blue Jays. You've seen the Blue Jays clubhouse now. What was it like when you?
It's awful.
But there was no place you could hide for the most part, was there?
It was not. No, absolutely not.
Now?
No, you can go any
room. They got elevators in the clubhouse that take them
waterfalls.
Waterfalls?
Waterfalls.
You got waterfalls in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Do they really? I haven't seen
them. Well, I mean, I was saying, they ain't got any homers in them waterfalls. That's what I always said to them.
Anyhow.
Yeah, I still don't believe you. I mean, this will be a thing until I'm gone. And we no longer speak.
I
do not believe you and Wilner. And when Wilner tells me that every time I talk to him, remember that time? No, I have no idea. I couldn't have picked you out of a lineup, Wilner. I will go to my grave thinking that about the both of you. So
that's
true.
That's really, really horribly disappointing.
Maybe Burnett made me feel that way, and because he used to speak very highly of you.
Yeah, right. I bet he did. I'm sure AJ spoke really highly of me.
He did.
I had a love-hate relationship with AJ.
It was more hate.
It was more hate.
It was 90-10. I mean, and for AJ to hate you, you had to do some things to him that, because he's one of the nicest humans ever. I mean, looking at him, he is. You obviously don't know AJ.
He's
one of the nicest people ever.
I haven't lived with him like you have.
Like, he's one of the nicest people ever. Like, if he hates you, man, the things you must have said to him or wrote about him or something. Boy, man.
Yeah, you didn't really have to say that because I knew there was some tension there. But
does it matter? It doesn't matter.
I being liked on the list of
He's been on our show a couple of times, so he must not hate you too much.
On the list of things as a reporter you want to be, liked is about sixth. I really don't give a rat's ass. I never did give a rat's ass.
He's a pretty big deal, so I'm assuming you needed some bites from him and some conversations after a tough start, which he wasn't the greatest here. Like, let's be honest. Like, I used to, it was a running joke. Why, you know, he always used to throw harder away from the Rogers Center. And I used to always tell him that. Dude, it's like you go and you pitch on the road, it's 99 to 100. You come here, it's like 94. What the heck's going on, dude? Like, clean that up, be better. I used to be running a joke.
You'd rather be
about that.
You'd rather be respected is the only thing you wanted to be. Respected for being fair.
He had a tremendous walkout song here, and I can't remember
Marilyn
the name.
Marilyn Manson.
It was tremendous. It was tremendous. And I said,
beautiful people,
if you're going to play that, you better throw
you
a
better
bazillion.
Like
and
that.
It was 94. And I'm like, it just don't add up, buddy. Like, and he used to get so mad at me when I'd say that.
That is true. If you're going to have a walk-up song like that, you better be
good and a hard thrower. And
yeah.
You know how he used to, he would, in Florida, I think, he chucked the ball through the window and broke the window on purpose.
Yeah, the little.
I said, if you're,
car
when the car was riding by and he threw it in the window.
Yeah.
I said, you should just do that at first warm-up throw at the Rogers Center because you're throwing like 94. I could hit you. And it was like he'd get mad at me and throw things at me and.
AJ was
he's a character. He's a good man. He's always nice to me.
He was.
I got a lot of time for him.
Yeah, I don't know if I was. I don't even know if I was ever really that hard on him, to be honest.
Maybe it was just a group.
I've always told the story for reasons I've never been able to figure out. Mike Rutsey, he used to write for the Toronto Sun, and I were like. Frank Thomas, who, you know, his time here was short. It was great with us. I mean, it just depends on the guy.
Yeah.
I told you the B.J. Ryan story. B.J. Ryan shows up one day. Tom Young, longtime producer of the mm-hmm. Jays games, and myself, we're sitting on that beautiful veranda at the Vinoy.
Yeah.
And it's like 1:30 in the morning, and we're having a drink, and we're just about to pack up. And B.J. Ryan shows up and says, you guys here for a while? I said, yeah, sure. Comes and sits with us till like 3:30 in the morning.
Just remember,
drinking Jack Daniels and smoking cigars.
I'm sure you know this. Baseball players are very, very sensitive, and we hate it. We hate reading the truth and hearing the truth. So I'm sure, as good a writer as you are, and we know you are, that you were writing the truth.
A little practice.
And I'm sure. So whoever matters in there don't like reading it or hearing it, and sort of the word gets around that he will write the truth. So you know, and that's just the way baseball players are. I mean, look at the Blue Jays now. That's sort of the way it is, right?
I always used to get pissed off in Montreal because I was the English language writer. There were two other French papers and a French language wire service, and I'd always catch crap from somebody. I said, if you only you could read French, because what I'm calling you and what they're calling you is they're calling you way worse.
Yeah, I used to tell AJ this all the time. If you don't like it, stop making so much money. It's facts.
All right, let's move on from AJ Burnett to JJ Cooper.
See what you did there.
That was very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
He is editor-in-chief of Baseball America. JJ, thanks for joining us on Blair and Barker today. Well, we were, we were planning on having you on. It just so happened that you were coming on the same day that Jack Leiter is making his MLB debut. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is we just had Jeff Passan on a few minutes ago when we were talking about the run and pitching injuries we're seeing. And I asked him, you know, does he think that because of this run and pitching injuries, we may see a team at some point this year make a call to Trevor Bauer? And I think we kind of agreed that that probably won't happen. But, you know, I know that people have spent a lot of time talking about pitching injuries at the major league level this year. And I know that if you look at the raw numbers, you know, at least I'm led to believe, it's not that much of an outlier. It just seems like it is this year. I'm just wondering what the trickle-down impact of all these injuries is having at the minor league level, particularly when you're talking about really good prospects.
It's funny. I just finished recording a podcast on this very topic literally right before this cut, so I feel very well primed to talk about this, which I would say I would agree with your point, like that the raw numbers aren't that different. But I think the important thing that is different is the severity, is the quality of the pitcher, right? Like, sorry for all the relievers out there, but if a middle reliever blows out his elbow, it's not going to catch as much attention as when Gerrit Cole is on the IL with an elbow injury that we hope isn't going to take Tommy John surgery. Or, you know, we've seen Spencer Strider. When you're seeing Sandy Alcantara's recovering from one, Yuri Perez, who's one of the better young pitchers in the game, when you have this caliber of starter, Cy Young winner after Cy Young winner having elbow injuries, we're going to notice it more. And the thing I would say about all of this is, when you're asked about the trickle down of the minors and all, is we have everyone involved in this, I think, is very well-intentioned. But I also think that there has to be a lot of introspection that basically says, has the industry of baseball figured out ways to improve this, or is it no better, no worse, or is it getting worse? Because the thing I would say about that is we're now 20 years away from the pitcher abuse era, right? Like, there was a time where you could absolutely point to young pitchers and say, you know, I don't know if it was a great idea that Mark Pryor threw 133 pitches right as a 22-year-old. Or, you know, Kerry Wood, man, he's great, but, you know, I think they're letting him pitch too much. That never happens now. It used to be, when I started at Baseball America more years ago than I wanted to admit, pitching coaches in the minors, there was less kind of visibility and all. They had a little bit more freedom, and sometimes maybe a guy would be watching, you know, a young pitcher dominate and go, you know, he's got a no-hitter, let's let him go 130 pitches tonight to get the no-hitter or whatever. At this point, we're in a world where when a pitching prospect throws 100 pitches in a minor league game, it's worthy of stop, you know, a news story, right? We're now in a world where Paul Skeens, who was the number one pick in the draft and was dominating every Friday night for LSU at this time last year, throwing 110 pitches every seventh day, you know, is going three innings and then is done. Or we had Jared Jones in the big league, so very promising young pitcher for the Pirates, had a outing this week where he threw five innings on 59 pitches, 50 strikes, and he's pulled. And I'm not saying that any of these things are bad or ill-intentioned or anything like that, but I do kind of ask the question, do we have any evidence that have we overcorrected? Has the industry overcorrected to a point? Because it's not seeming to help. We're not, maybe it is that all that's done is counterbalance all of the velocity that's improved and increased in the game and all that. Or is it that for all of the good intentions, we've kind of overcorrected the other way where all these attempts to limit how much pitchers throw isn't doing a whole lot to help keep them healthy?
Yeah, JJ, Major League Baseball wants to get eyeballs to the TV sets, and the way they do that is hit by guys hitting homers and guys throwing a bazillion miles an hour. Listen to you talk. Why would Major League Baseball want to change this? All those pitchers that we're talking about throw a bazillion and can spin it and nobody can hit it. If I want to change that and force organizations to try and do that, now all of a sudden they're pitching a little bit more when we've seen this part of it, and this gets a few more eyeballs to the set, which is what baseball wants to do. I just don't know why they'd ever want to change it.
Well, the way I put it is that if I'm running a major league team, which no one would ever be stupid enough to do that, but if I was, my goal, I don't get hired. The MLB's job, Major League Baseball's job, in consultation with the MLBPA, their job is to set the rules to make the most entertaining product possible. But my job, if I'm a GM, if I'm a president of baseball ops, if I'm a manager, if I'm a farm director, pitching coach, whatever, my job is to win games, right? And what I'm talking about here is not like, look, there is no way to take the velocity back out of the game. Because you know why? Because as much as I know a lot of people wistfully wish that we could return to an era of, Charlie Liebrandt, dotting, the corners at 86 or 88, and that's not a way in the modern game to succeed as much as if you have someone else. We've discovered in the last 20 years that you can help a pitcher add velocity. And 98 down the middle is more effective than 88 usually on the corners. It's just the reality of it. But what I would say with that is that the part that also is less aesthetically pleasing is when the great ace pitcher leaves the game after four or five, because it's like, okay, we're going to turn it over to the pen. And that's the question I'm asking right now is, I don't know if that's necessarily helping these guys stay healthier. And I don't also know if that's helping teams win games, because when I look at the best pitchers of this generation, the ones who've been the aces year in, year out, they're generally guys who pitch. I know that there's a Blake Snell who goes forward, goes five and then gets pulled. But it's Max Scherzer, it's Justin Verlander, it's Gerrit Cole, who are closer to the archetype of aces that we've talked about from past years. Sandy Alcantara, who I know is hurt now, but like I think that those teams have gotten more value out of those players. It's helped them win games, because when you have the guy like that who can consistently give you seven dominating innings, well, it makes the whole rest of your team. You're not going to ever get your fifth starter to be that guy. But if your ace can do that, well, then that means that you've taken innings away from your fifth best reliever and put them to your best pitcher on the team. I don't know that if we're limiting these guys to 150 innings, which is often the case now, is that helping them stay healthier? And I don't think that we have a whole lot of evidence that it is.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is kind of the issue. And the other issue too is, I mean, baseball, pitchers come from everywhere, right? They come from the college ranks. Mm-hmm. They're high schoolers. They come from the Dominican Republic. I mean, in some instances, there are controls on them. In some instances, there aren't. I'm wondering, it seems to me that one of the issues we have is a lot of times the first thing organizations need to do when they draft and sign a young pitcher is, it's almost like, if you bring a guy up who's been in a travel team and has been hitting high velo and pitching in big games and all this stuff, if you're a minor league team or if you're an organization, it's got to be awfully hard to try to put the reins on a guy right away. You know, like a 19-year-old kid who's in his first camp or whatever, and he's got his first pro contract. How do teams go about managing that? Because it seems to me it'd be awfully hard to sort of say, okay, the stuff that got you here. And this, to me, gets to this point. The stuff that got you here, great. Now we want you to do something different.
it's on a human level, it would just seem to be a really hard sell.
You can't. It's very hard to say don't throw your best.
Yes.
But what teams are doing right now is they're saying, but you're only going to throw three, right?
Like, okay.
There are pitching prospects out there, solid, very good pitching prospects. Marco Raya, I do the Twins for us. Marco Raya is a quality pitching prospect, the high school high pick that they took, 2020 draft, if I remember correctly. Throws hard, really good stuff. But he never threw 75 pitches in a game last year. So what they're doing right now, and again, not just the Twins, but a whole lot of teams, is we're going to limit your workload. Because we know we can't limit. We're not going to tell you to throw at 85%.
Right.
But at the same time, again, and I'm not, I want to profess, I talk to orthopedists, I talk to physical trainers, all that. I talk to pitching coaches, but I'm not one. But the thing that I do kind of keep hearing over and over is that I know that pitching is an unnatural action and all that. However, running a marathon is an unnatural action, right? Mm-hmm. And what I would say with that is you don't tell marathon runners that what we're going to do is limit you to a mile, or 2 miles because we're worried that the marathon running is going to wear you out. You got to run marathons to be. And if we're trying to develop pitchers, you got to worry about abuse. You got to worry about overuse. Absolutely. You got to listen to a pitcher and you've got to create a culture where a pitcher is comfortable, because pitchers are competitors, where they're comfortable telling the trainer or the pitching coach, something doesn't feel right. Because how often do we read, how often do we hear from the pitcher who's going down for, elbow injury, surgery or whatever, and it's like he'd been feeling it for a while, but he didn't want to tell anybody because, he didn't want to slow his development or whatever. We've got to create a culture where that kind of information, because, again, if you're pitching when you're hurt, that can make things much worse than if that's treated because before things get too bad. But at the same time, I really do worry that we have pitchers who are signing at 18, 19, 20, 21, and they're being asked, okay, well, what we're going to do now is we're going to limit you to 3 innings, once a week or once every 5 days or whatever. And I don't know if that's necessarily preparing you for the end goal either, because no one's trying to develop these guys to throw 3 innings and an outing in the big leagues. So we're kind of asking them then the same way I kind of worry about how relievers we've had. If you look at the last 10 years, there's always going to be a couple of college relievers in every draft class who are thought that they're going to really kind of develop quickly. They're going to move fast to the big leagues, and they almost never do. And one of the things that I've noticed about this is these pitchers are almost never allowed to pitch back-to-back days in the minors, these relievers. Mm-hmm. Well, when you get to the majors, they're going to ask you to pitch back-to-back days. So wouldn't it be better to learn how to do that in Class A? And I know I get it, but there's a risk of injury to that. Yes, there is, but it's better to learn how to do that. Then I talked to Corey Niebel, who's was a successful pitcher for a long time, multiple teams, who was one of these guys who actually had success. And the Tigers, to their credit, did it differently with him. And he said that was really important to him because you don't have that workload in college. Well, what it meant for him is the key thing for him was not about figuring out how to pitch when tired or anything like that. The key thing was figuring out, how do I get my lift in? How do I stay strong in season when I don't know if I'm going to pitch tonight?
Yeah.
But at least you got to learn that in the minors, not in the majors. Because if you're trying to learn that in the majors, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, I think the Blue Jays are going through that with Ricky Tiedemann, right? They really don't know how to just sort of basically gloves off, letting him go out there and pitch every 5 days. But I do want to ask you about Aurelvis Martinez in the Blue Jays organization. Every time I ask a scout about Aurelvis, or I ask multiple scouts, I get different answers. Some scouts say, I like the stuff. He's got power. We can teach him how to lay off a breaking ball. I ask other scouts, they're like,
he's
you could
guy.
Probably take him or leave him. He's just a guy. Anything that you've heard one way or the other about Aurelvis Martinez?
The thing that encourages me, because you just nailed it. That's the concern. That's the big question, right? But the thing that encourages me with Aurelvis Martinez is, we have seen improvement with it, right? Now, it's still the question. It remains the question. It probably will be even after he's in the big leagues, right? Because some of this is going to be development. Like, development to get to the big leagues is one thing, but I think it's also, you can never underestimate how important is development once you are in the big leagues, right? Because you don't stop improving. The great thing about baseball, especially at the major league level, is it is the perfect mirror to your strengths and your weaknesses. And whatever your weaknesses are, they're going to find them. And then you're going to have to show that you can kind of solve some of your issues, because if not, they're going to tear you apart. But the thing that encourages me is, if we were talking 2 years ago about Aurelvis Martinez, this was the overarching theme, and there was very little sign that he was making any improvement on it. It was something where you're like, okay, guys who have this kind of profile, this kind of aggressiveness, this inability to lay off of, you know, pitches out of the zone, they don't succeed. And I'm not going to tell you that last year he turned into Juan Soto or anything like that, because he didn't, right? But he made significant improvements in those areas. Now, what we have to see now is okay, that only got him to, okay, don't write him off, right? That didn't get him to, oh, this is a big league star. That improvement got him to, you know what? Don't write him off. Let's see if he can continue to. So now what we need to see this year, this is why it's right that he's still in the minors. Okay, can he take that next step, right? Can he get to – the goal for this year is not that he's going to become the most patient hitter in the world with the best plate zone, strike zone discipline you're ever going to see. But if he can get that to fringe average this year in the minors, well, the rest of his tools then will make him a potential impact player in the big leagues, because, yeah, like, his power, immense. He actually has a chance. He's not going to end up being a first baseman or, you know, a defensive nothing or anything like that. So if you put that all together, he still has a chance to be really good, which 2 years ago, I would say that last year was kind of that inflection point where if he didn't show any improvement in that last year, you probably could say, you know what, this is probably just never going to work out. But he is making improvements in the areas he needs to make improvements of. Now we just need to see him continue to do it and get better at it.
Yep.
JJ, really good of you to join us, man. Mm-hmm. Terrific insight. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
JJ Cooper's editor-in-chief of Baseball America. It's great stuff on the pitching and that. And that's, you know, we had Dr. Andrews on last week, and we were talking about that as well. And that is, it's, you know, as JJ said, it is an unnatural act. And the thing is, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine whose son plays baseball. He's not a pitcher, but he plays baseball. And he said, you know, think about this. Think about the levels that a guy who becomes an elite pitcher, think about what he goes through. You know, you talk about he's 12 years old when he's 16 years old. You know, he travel, especially in the States, travel team. You know, he's going to go to high school and maybe goes to college. Maybe gets drafted out of college. Then he goes to the minors. And it's all based on getting the attention of somebody. How do you do that to progress? You do it by throwing hard. And then you get to a certain point where now it's starting to make money. And it's okay, we got to kind of look at this a little differently now. And I just think I don't know if it's ever, I think maybe the thing Dr. Andrews said that really, I just don't know what's going to change. I don't know how you do it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how you take that 16-year-old kid who, you know, it's a 16-year-old kid, mm-hmm. and wants to throw hard and wants to get that recognition. If you're a scout, like, how do you judge if a 16-year-old kid comes along and he's a pitcher and he doesn't have great velo, but he can paint and he's got decent secondary, all that mm-hmm. stuff. Is he going to get the same love that the kid who comes out throwing 94 is, 95 at 16? Not a chance.
Yes, it's all about money. Throwers are cheaper. I mean, that's bottom line. If you're a pitcher and you know how to add and subtract, you're going to go deeper in a game, you're going to want more money. They're going to have to pay you more. I can have four or five throwers on my team who are going to go out there and give me three innings that throw 98 miles an hour, and I know 98 is hard to hit, and there's never a fastball count anymore, and you like to spin it, and people are teaching you how to, you know, elevate your spin rates and get more swing and miss and do it in bunches instead of doing it over six or seven innings. And if I'm an organization and I'm an owner and I don't have to pay a guy as much money to do that, and I can be successful and win baseball games by doing it, why the heck would I ever change it?
Yeah.
Like, there's no money in it. And if, again, if I'm a pitcher and I'm a young person and I see guys making tons of money and doing it, like, in small sample sizes by just throwing hard and spinning it a lot, why wouldn't I do that? Again, I've said this. If I could make 3 or 4 years of money that I could make in 10 or, you know, or 8 or 9 or 10 years of having to pitch, why wouldn't I do the 3 or 4 year thing? It's just common sense. It makes total sense. And I just don't know how they'd ever talk a player into doing it and going backwards when now they know how to make money and lots of it in a hurry. It just doesn't make any sense to a player. So I just don't see that ever happening. And again, how would you ever get eyeballs to a TV set by watching a pitcher anymore? Like, you just don't, right? It's everybody ever asks, boy, look how hard he throws. He's throwing, you know, 100 miles an hour. How do we talk about Nate Pearson all the time? Yeah. Why is he throwing 94 now? Why isn't he throwing 99 to 102? And now that we're seeing it, we want to see more of it. We don't want to see the 94 anymore because he's not a real good pitcher when he throws 94. So, yeah, I don't ever see that changing. Again, I think they're going to take their chances. If I get hurt, I get hurt. Now I'm getting hurt making gobs of money. I could sit on my couch and, you know, count my hundreds instead of trying to pitch my way through it and not making as much money. It just doesn't make any sense for anybody.
We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to play this clip we've been promising to play. Mm. Hopefully you'll find it as funny as we did. Hopefully not all of you have gone on.
Well, I've lived it. So,
yeah, Barker's lived it. Yep. We'll do that next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan at Sportsnet.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Make sure I don't knock this over. It is Blair and Barker. It is the stretch drive. It's a gameless Thursday. There's no Jays game tonight. Boys are in San Diego right now.
Snyder can't be blowing saves at the end of the game.
Oh, I'm sure Snyder's figuring out. It doesn't matter. There are people who are, I'm going to go online now. There are people hating on John Schneider.
Oh, it's tremendous. Like, it is just, I've never seen John standing on the mound throwing a pitch. Have you?
Yeah, but here's the thing.
I haven't.
Yeah, you know that the thing is that because John is, people see and hear John every day. They don't see and hear the GM every day, so they got to dislike somebody. The focus is on the manager.
You can do what you want. You buy your own ticket and pay your own bills. You can hate who you want to hate, but.
Well, it's not a matter. I think we need to, and I'm not going to turn this into, you know, as much as I really like John, as much as I think John's, I think John's a better manager than a lot of people give him credit for.
Sometimes he's done some things to make you scratch your head. But
I think I understand. I like to think we have an understanding of everything that's going into some of these decisions that maybe other people don't, is the way I would put it. It is. Again, I'm always, and it's not just him. It's every coach and every manager. I just keep reminding people. Before you jump to conclusions, just assume, one, that they don't want to look stupid, two, that they're not trying to lose a game, and three, that they got better freaking information and more recent information than you do. Like, we had a guy call up in Blue Jays talk and say, why did they send Nate Pearson down when they had Chad Green hurt? Well, because Chad Green was healthy when they sent Nate Pearson down. Anyhow. So
fans are invested, Jeff. You got to give them that. Like,
yeah,
they want to see their team win, they're hanging on every pitch, which is what the Blue Jays want.
Well, I'm hanging on every pitch, basically. The Jays were not the only team to have their bullpen blow a game yesterday. The Tampa Bay Rays. By the way, the Rays. Are the Rays, Jays, and Red Sox all 10-9 right now? Like, there's no team in the division under 500. I don't think. Pete Fairbanks did not have a great game.
Rays are 11-9.
Rays are 11-9 yesterday.
Blue Jays and Red Sox are 10-9. Okay.
This was Pete Fairbanks after the game. His post-game interview, I want you to watch it. If you're on TV, I want you to listen to it. But, and stick with it to the end. If you could play the interview, please.
Gotcha. Was it just a matter of command, location, selection, anything specific?
Uh, No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck. So, you know, we're going to try and rectify that. But for right now, I'm going to be pretty pissed about it.
Okay, where do you kind of go from here? Is it looking at tape? Is it going through mechanics? Where do you kind of go from here?
You tell me. I've tried that. If you got an answer, I'd love to hear. Just, you know, not going to let it beat me up for, I'll maybe give it till 10. It's 9:44 right now. We'll give it 16 minutes of sulk, and then we'll, you know, get back on the bump and figure it out.
That is how you entertain the media, show that you care.
I think that goes to show you that not all the time that baseball players have the answer. It's not lack of effort and information and, you know, just getting with your buddies and trying to figure out. Sometimes you just do everything that you think is going right. It's like when I asked Bo Bichette why he's not getting any hits, and I said, is it mechanical? And he said, he calls me B, which is kind of cool. He said, B.
It
absolutely is not. Like it is, mechanically, he's never felt better. So I just think that's kind of funny.
Are you guys living together or what?
No. Absolutely not, but sometimes it's respect, and, you know, you got to earn that. Does he call you Jeff? No. JB?
I used to get called JB.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. To your face?
Yeah. JB doesn't bother me.
Huh. I just think that's funny, because I've had that conversation many times to myself, but it was yelling into a locker, and nobody was around, and it's usually right before I went to the shower. And
there is an art form to
saying those things, acting that way, and not bringing your teammates down. It's
bingo.
An art.
Bingo.
Because there's a lot of times where, you know, you hear the same guy do it quite a few times, and it's like they're doing it just to let everybody hear them doing it. And it's just not there, and you get tired of it, and then you start calling that person out, especially when you start, you know, not doing well and you know, everybody's trying to go to the same place.
All-encompassing suck.
Well, that's awesome. Like, it is just, I've said words that I don't even know, didn't even know was words. Like, you just get in that where you just can't take it anymore. It's like,
I have that happen quite
often.
It's
like, it's like when we're sitting in traffic, it's like you just talk to yourself and you make up words that, so good for him. Like, I hope he, you know, you try and figure it out. Yeah.
I like guys who are...
If you got the answer, let me know. Here's my number.
Give me a little bit of originality.
Oh, man.
You know, it's like, give me a little bit of originality.
I'm sure he's not saying that to make your job easier.
No.
He's saying that because he's tried everything, and it's, you know, the underground city, if they can't fix it, who can fix it?
Yeah, no, there are guys that I don't know now, but there are guys I used to think, you know, you came in the clubhouse and wrote out your answers ahead of time, didn't you? Because, like, you're trying to be witty. There's BS eyewash witty, and there's kind of spur of the moment witty.
Well, you knew right away when you walked up to him and his hair looked that way. It was like, you know, it's like when you, because you knew he knew the answer that they were, the question they were going to ask.
Yeah.
And you knew you had to ask it. And just walking up there to him, you're like, and then the little pause, like.
And looking at the best thing is looking at the clock.
It was 16 minutes.
Now I got 16 minutes to sulk anyhow.
Thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck.
I love baseball. That's why I love baseball. And Jeff, I can't tell you how many times I've heard grown men act that way on planes, bathrooms, showers, like it is together. It's just like, you got to answer because I don't. No, I got none either. It's just like, you can't fix it. I mean, it's the most frustrating thing in the world.
So we mentioned the Jays have today off. They've got three games against the Padres starting tomorrow. Yariel Rodriguez against Matt Waldron. If you missed the news, Yu Darvish has gone on the IL with a neck injury. I think he was supposed to pitch against Barrio Saturday. I don't know. Anyhow, the Padres have got no starter for Saturday. It's TBC. Chris Bassett against Joe Musgrove on Sunday. It took me a while to actually like interleague baseball, because I love teams playing in their own division. It's one of the things that I really liked about baseball is the fact you had so many games in your division.
But there used to be, there are people out there who aren't going to believe this, but I mean, there used to be a difference between the American League and National League, and it wasn't just the DH, it was
curveball in one league, fastball in another.
Bingo. You had your own umpires.
Absolutely.
The two leagues, they had different umpires.
two sets of suck compared to just one set of suck.
Boy, I mean, just do it for 15 years, two in a row.
But I do. I love the interleague baseball now. I like
going in. Coming from
a player, I wouldn't like it. Because
you don't hold it. You wouldn't like
baseball. No, because I want to be very familiar with the people that I play against. And you're not very familiar with the teams that you're going in to face, how a pitcher's trying to throw to you. Mark, and you know as well as anybody.
Let me just say this.
It's not see ball, hit ball anymore. It's not just I'm going to go out there and throw strike one and be unpredictable. That ain't the way it works anymore.
You're going to tell me that Kevin Barker wouldn't trade a weekend in Detroit for a weekend in San Diego?
No, I wouldn't play in the Central. Like, no. Like, the older you get, you could, even if you're a minor leaguer, I'm choosing the division and the leagues and where I want to go. I wanted to be in the International League if I were in the minor leagues. I didn't want to be in the PCL because the PCL, first of all, stunk, and the travel was atrocious. There's two really good reasons.
Okay.
I could bus in the IL, and it was like a couple-hour bus trip. I don't mind doing that.
Jimmy John's on the way, too.
I don't mind doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was, once you get older, no, I ain't going to PCL. I don't want to go to, to Vegas. Not a chance. So I would say no to that. I would rather go to the Mexican League. Like, that's facts. I've done it. So, yeah, you get to thinking about certain places you want to play. And you know as well as I do, the Blue Jays are thinking, as hitters, we don't face these guys a ton. Mm. It ain't just go up and look for a fastball. They don't do that.
Yeah.
So it would be a challenge for a lineup that's not always the greatest to just go up and compete and battle and grind. And it's not the easiest thing to do and not have quick outs and, not be overly aggressive. Like, there's a lot of things go into facing guys that you have never faced or don't face a ton. You got to simplify that sometimes, and sometimes they're not capable of doing that.
What are you looking for from Yariel Rodriguez tomorrow? What would you be? After what we saw in his first start,
I think the quality of his location, I think that's sort of the graduation part of it, is the stuff they all know is really, really good. All the secondary stuff, the start and stop, and the arm angles, I think, will be consistent. He'll still do some, some mixing in some lower arm slots, maybe trying to trick a guy that's right-handed with a secondary thing occasionally, but not all the time. Don't abuse that. It's a consistent arm slot so he can repeat delivery and have the same release point and actually have that thing go where he wants it to go, because his stuff's off the charts. But they want him to go deeper into a game, right? That's the ultimate goal there, and do it with less pitches. So that's what I expect. I think because he's at his age that he's at, I think he's 28. So he's been around long enough to understand that you can make adjustments between starts to make yourself better at certain things, which will in turn get you deeper into a game, which will make your team better and give them a better chance to win a game. So that's what I expect.
Again, today is an off day for the Blue Jays. They're in San Diego Friday. Yariel Rodriguez against Matt Waldron. Saturday, Jose Berríos against to be confirmed. And Sunday, Chris Bassitt against Joe Musgrove. And from that point on, it's a series against the Kansas City Royals. Then they're at home. Do they get the Dodgers the next homestand, don't they?
Yeah.
They got Shohei Ohtani. Let me just check my flight checker. I'm just kidding.
Really?
Yeah, I shouldn't do that.
I mean, he is tweeting things about Chad Green.
Stop.
I mean, did I need to go there? Like,
no, I don't think you did.
I did.
You have a burr in your ass about the Chad Green thing. You really do.
Because I mean, it's not like, again, I think people need to realize that these coaches and managers don't sit over there trying to figure out ways to screw it up and not pitch the best arm they have.
I'm right. They play the Dodgers in Kansas City. Dodgers in town. The Doyers in town for three. The 26th.
That should be fun. Yeah.
So we got three against San Diego, four against Kansas City. I'm calling a 4-3 road trip.
What did you call it? Win week? What was it? What did you say?
If we forgot about that.
No, we didn't.
Yeah.
There it is. Guaranteed win weekend.
Well, against the Rockies. It's not fault that they spit out the bit in the first game. And it was guaranteed. It was a guaranteed win weekend. They
just win a series. Free. Continue to do that, you'll be fine.
San Diego, I'm calling. What do you? So what are we looking at here?
How many games they play against
them? 6-1 or it's a disaster, right?
2 out of 3. Is they play them 3 games? 2 out of 3.
Three. That's all you. San Diego.
Continue to do what you're doing on the pitching side.
Win series.
And start trying to take steps forward offensively. Now you should start seeing guys that when they get a pitch and you're watching it on TV and you're saying to yourself, man, he should have hammered that, they actually should be hammering that. I think that is sort of where they're at now, this part of the season. It's no longer early.
Oh, it's still time. Early. It's not either.
It might be on the schedule, it is. But now you're getting into warmer weather and you're playing in domes and it's time. You should mechanically be sound now. You've seen enough pitching. You know, your timing should be there. Mentally, you shouldn't be overthinking bat pass. And it's time. Let's start seeing a little bit more of that, especially the first four guys in that lineup. First four guys. It's time to start seeing Springer back spinning something to the poolside. How about we see that?
I mean, after spending all spring hearing how he was – sort of focusing more and pulling the ball.
I mean, he's fired up about a 17 hopper to right. Like, we want to see the getting it down, getting it singing. Yeah. It's that part of the season where when you're supposed to do things because of how much money you're making, and I know, don't roll your eyes, but it's a thing. It's time to start seeing guys starting to do that, right?
Back leg cities.
I think we'll hopefully start seeing those things.
Who did you come away from being most impressed with this homestand? Starting pitching aside. Starting pitching was, we know it's there. Who in the lineup maybe impressed you more than you thought?
Well, I think Turner was the obvious guy. I mean, the last couple of days, he's looked like he's 39 years old. But, up until the last couple of days, I think just the way he has his at-bat, no matter whether it's 0-0 or two strikes, like it never changes. He's trying to do the same thing all the time. Get the ball in the air to the pull side and do damage. Like he's a collision guy. And do it with less velocity with bat speed. Like he's just trying to do it as quiet and as easy as possible because he knows he has 3 swings. Like that's pretty impressive. And I think Dalton Varsha is starting to get the ball in the air to the pull side. Tells y'all you need to know where he's at mentally. Maybe mental side is more important than mechanics and bat pass and those kind of things. Sometimes you get out of your own way.
It's funny watching Justin Turner and seeing him repeatedly game after game after game, you kind of realize why he has been able to maintain this level of play at the age of 38 and 30. Like you could see now why he would still be a valuable
player.
But
I will say, if I were John, I'd stop running him. I mean, he's slower than dirt. Like, stop that. Stop putting him on. Yeah, like 3-2 counts. You don't have to run him. Like, he's not on the team to do that. Like, trying to trick people and steal a base. You know, I know Bud was telling him to go first pitch, like, suave. He's 39. You know, he's there to hit and drive in runs. Ain't nobody needs him to be pulling no hammy. You know, you tend to not have the hamstrings you used to have at 39. So let's lay off that a little bit. You know, be who you are. Be who you can be. Let's make some adjustments. Adapt and overcome. I'm sure they'll do that, but you know, again, I think there's time to start putting some pressure on the offense. Like, some guys need to step up. Springer, be better. Vladdy, be better. Bo, you know, stop trying to pull homers. Like, that's not you. Get a bunch of hits. Like, you know, it's not the try league, Jeff.
Get her done league. And tomorrow is Friday, which means
John Schneider.
John Schneider, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, will join us. And two, we will be going to the back leg line to select your comments, calls, observations, 416-413-3959. I think you've left a new message for the people, have you not?
Yeah.
You'll hear Kevin Barker's dulcet tones. So 416-413-3959. Get thee to the back leg line. If we like it, we'll get it on the air. If we don't, well, it didn't cost you anything anyhow. That's it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow from 2 to 4 Eastern. Have a great day.